Call the 87th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection Planning Council. My name is John Weingart, Surgeonsville, Huntington County.
Jack Schreier, Morris County, Freehold.
Janice Kovac, Sean Clinton, Huntington County.
Mike Francis, Paccam Borough.
Mimi Letts, Precipity, Morris County.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Huntington County.
Amy Sheway, State of Illinois.
For all state public members, Chester Jackson.
Scott Whitehead, Public Member, Marshall.
Is there anyone on the phone? Okay, we do have a forum. This meeting has been advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise to place allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
People in the public over here, there are the agenda and other documents relevant to the meeting on the table outside. We have minutes from our July 16th meeting in the packet. Is there a motion to approve them?
I'll move this.
I'll second.
Other comments, questions? All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Abstentions. Yes. Committee reports, there is a short statement from Ms. Calabrese, Chair of the Audit Committee packets. Short enough that I'll just read it, I guess. The appointed agency auditor, Mercadian, has completed the audit of the Highland Council's directly administered funds for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2008. The audit report represents the Highland Council's directly administered funds of the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2008, and was conducted in accordance with generally accepted standards with financial audits contained in government auditing standards issued by the Controller General of the United States. The auditors did not identify any significant or unusual transactions or significant accounting policies in controversial or emerging areas for which there was a lack of authoritative guidance or consensus, nor did they encounter any difficulties in dealing with management relating to the performance of the audits. There were no recommendations arising out of this audit. A phone conference was held on August 24th by committee member Glenn Petrano with the council board chief, Mercadian, and this completed the requirements of the FY 2008 audit. This concludes the statement. I would recommend the Highland Council acceptance of the audit report. Need a vote to do this?
You have a resolution.
We have a resolution. Someone like to introduce the resolution?
Call for the resolution.
Second.
Second. Comments or questions? Public comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Approved. Personnel committee, the council met this morning to discuss, primarily discuss the furlough policies being put in place by the governor's office and how they affect council staff and how does it? Briefly, respect briefly, the staff have to.
We wanted some guidance from the governor's office. The governor had asked that all state employees take the furlough. As an authority, though, you have the decision-making on this, and the personnel committee met to discuss this, and Highland Council staff will be taking 9 furlough days, some this year, in this fiscal year, 9 furlough days. They did take one in May, which brings it to a total of 10. Two of those days, one is the day after Thanksgiving, and the other day is, thank you, Lincoln's birthday. And the rest of them are what they call self-directed furlough days. So the staff will go through the normal process of putting in a request, and provided it works within the work that's needed to be done in the office, those days will be allowed. So those are the furlough days that will be taken by staff.
Will be closing the office on those two specific days?
Yes.
Executive Director.
Well, I do have a PowerPoint to assist us with the executive director's report, because I really want to bring you up to date on certain issues that have arisen through plan performance, and to give you our progress report out in that. So it's a plan performance update. We talk about plan performance grants. And lastly, there's some information on the Highlands TDR program, some of which you asked for at the last meeting. You asked for some clarity on what were the Highlands Council's responsibilities and what was the Highlands Department Credit Bank responsibilities. So we'll go through all of those. To bring you up to date on municipal plan conformance, we now have 75 of the 88 municipalities have filed a notice of intent. So those municipalities are working with us. Again, that is non-binding in the planning area, but it allows the municipalities to work under the plan conformance grant program to consider plan conformance mandatory for their preservation area lands, voluntary for the planning area lands. 72 municipalities in 4 counties have applied for the initial assessment grant. 74 municipalities have filed a 2009 plan conformance grant application. 48 municipalities have received their final municipal build-out report. 72 have received their module 1, which is the first part of those build-out reports. And some of them are working with us on module 2. So as we move forward, in fact, all of the 72, but there are different stages of review. 41 municipalities have submitted their draft Highlands Environmental Resource Inventories, which is module 4. And module 5 are the Highlands Master Plan elements. They are due to us September 1st. We've already received a couple of those. So we're moving forward. There are 7 modules in plan conformance, the 7th being the plan conformance petition. So a little more information on some of these. This map shows you the 75 towns that are currently working with us under the notice of intent to consider plan conformance for the planning area and to do the work necessary for their preservation area lands. Preservation area submissions are due to us December 8th of this year. This map shows you the Highlands build-out reports that are currently posted. What happens is once one has been completed, it is sent to the mayor and their leading professional for plan conformance. 10 days after it goes out, if we hear nothing back from them to alert us if there's any issue or concern, then they are posted. In the event that there's any errors that are found out later, we withdraw those and revise them, and that is the case for a couple of build-out reports that are there, and you'll see that on the website. This shows you the environmental resource inventories that have been submitted to date. So now we get into municipal plan performance modules 2 and 3, which was really looking at the build-out results and explaining then how module 3 is done, which is the creation of those fair share plans, the affordable housing element. Those training sessions were held August 17th, and the next one will be held on August 31st, where we meet with the professionals who are engaged in the plan conformance grant program. So those training sessions are part of the grant program. Module 6 are the ordinances, land use ordinances, and 2 sort of health ordinances, which I'll mention again in a few moments. Those training sessions have been held with the professionals involved August 20th and August 25th. To talk a little bit more about the municipal build-out report, to explain briefly how that build-out report was done. So these are the steps that we went through to do build-out reports. The first part of it is we give to the municipality, to the professional who's assigned to it for the municipality, a geodatabase. So it's a database linked to spatial files that shows every block and lot that we know of in that municipality, and we describe what we know about it, whether it's linked to infrastructure, so in other words, whether it's served by public water or sewer. We show whether it's septic, we show whether it's vacant and developable potentially. We show whether it's an oversized lot, so that it has future potential for subdivision. We show whether it's preserved. Everything that we know about it, we give that to the township's professionals, and the township's professionals go through and verify all that information. So the first step then is you describe your growth potential at full build-out based on available land for septic system and sewer development as constrained where applicable by utility capacity and water availability. Utility service areas are municipality identified The build-out model focuses on existing areas served, so where actually are linked to those public utilities, and other eligible areas based on the regional master plan. So in other words, those areas within existing community zones. Potential developable lands, municipality, again, identified because they verify all the information we've given them. The build-out model determines whether vacant, oversized, or redevelopable, and for sewer areas, if sufficient unconstrained lands exist. You then do a septic system yield. So you determine the total yield by the land use capability zone and the HUC 14 subwatershed for the total of the vacant and oversized lots. So you give them back a septic yield, which is related to the zone and the subwatershed. Utility capacity reduces the build-out estimates if demands exceed available capacity. That's for sewered properties only. So if there's lands available, but the utility is constrained, there's a limiting factor applied until you address that infrastructure, the build-out will limit what the capacity is. Water availability reduces build-out estimates, again, if demands by that sub-watershed exceed water availability. So the first part of it is to get that vacant land analysis. The second part of the analysis is the application of the regional master plan, such that if you have a limiting factor, it limits the amount of build out for each municipality.
The septic system yield, you know, if you have a situation where in a municipality there's maybe a large piece of undeveloped land, but there's easily accessible sewers, are you going to assume that they have to put septics in there and then calculate the?
We look at existing areas served by sewer, and then we look at the land use capability zone. Your regional master plan would say that you do not extend sewer into conservation zone areas or into preservation areas unless certain issues such as public health and safety. So what we look at is that piece of land in the existing community zone where it could be appropriate to extend sewer, and then you've got to look at capacity to see if there is capacity to extend that sewer. So all of these elements are taken into consideration.
An existing conservation zone or whatever, even if it's fully surrounded by sewers that maybe not have any direct connection yet, it hasn't been developed, we would still force it to have a septic system.
We would consider it under septic. What happens into the future is under certain conditions, such as, for example, if it's in agricultural resource area in the conservation zone, it might be suitable for cluster development. But certain proofs have to be made in order for that to be considered. Also, public health and safety always rules. There's always opportunity for under public health and safety. Dan, do you want to add anything to that?
I guess the only thing that I would add is to recognize that these build-out reports are a snapshot in time. They're based on the regional master plan as it exists, the conditions as they exist. Things can change after that. So you should not take the build-out report and say to yourself, okay, that's all that can happen in the municipality. It's rather a projection to build out of what could happen in the municipality if nothing changed. So it's not a restriction, it's a snapshot. So it's not zoning, it's not a regulation, it's not any of those things, it's just a projection.
All change.
You've got redevelopment opportunities, for example.
Redevelopment opportunities where a lot currently is shown as developed, and yet it later gets redeveloped, the build-out model would not address that. There's utility capacity constraints. Somebody overcomes that constraint by, for instance, fixing utility lines so that they're not losing water. Water becomes available. There are a number of possibilities that could happen. A map adjustment, a Highlands redevelopment area designation, a number of things could happen.
Why don't you take zoning into consideration?
Zoning is taken into consideration in the sewered areas. The sewered areas are built out at municipal zoning, but the septic system yield is based on the regional master plan, not on the zoning, because in many cases the zoning is, at the municipal level currently, is less restrictive than the regional master plan would be. But in the sewer service areas that are dealt with under this, we do in fact apply municipal zoning.
I think it should also be said that these build-out reports are not to be considered into the future. You don't look at each block and lot and then it doesn't determine what the future is. It determines the constraints and then planning, as we work move forward with these municipalities through plan conformance, they will plan, for example, where to use their yield. So it's not at a, it's not block and lot level. This doesn't define what occurs at a block and lot level. It's a tool for planning. And it assists with planning for wastewater management planning, the affordable housing planning, all of those types of issues.
The affordable housing, that brings up the whole COA issue.
Oh, then, I am going to address that. I knew you the extra. This is just a snapshot of some of the build-outs we've done. We felt this would assist you, and the comparison to the work that was done by COA for municipalities in terms of vacant lands analysis and the build-out projections that COA gave. So if you look here, this section is what you see from COA, and this section is what we've done through build-outs prepared by the Highlands Council. Hampton Borough, and I'll just read across to give you an example. If you look at the vacant land acres under the COA's projections for Hampton Borough, they saw 91 vacant lands that could be developed into the future. They then ascertained that that could yield 42 dwelling units and this much square footage of non-residential, so commercial, industrial, whatever, retail, 49,549 square feet. What we did is, first of all, we looked at the potential of full developable acres. We saw 193. We then removed the environmentally constrained lands. We saw 132. For net developable acres of 62, dwelling units that we could see under the regional master plan constraints would be 10 and no non-res square feet. Now, into the future, that does that mean there'll never be any more commercial industrial retail? No, not necessarily, because again, it gets back to what Dan mentioned about those redevelopment opportunities, for example. Also, some of the septic system yield, a town might decide to use that in their commercial area. So but these are our numbers, and later I'll show you then how you determine your COA numbers using this build-out. So your comparison really of this color to this, so you've got your vacant land acres to your net developable acres by the council, your dwelling units and your non-res square feet. Tewkesbury, they see, just getting out to the units, 933 units would be your full build-out projections under COA. Under the Highlands Council, 292. 24 for Chester Borough, 12 under the Highlands Council. So this shows you a little bit of what's happening when you do the comparison then between the Highlands build out and the build out by COA, projections of COA.
Is this on the website?
No. The build outs that have been posted today are, sorry, John, I didn't. Now I'll get into a little bit then about how this is going to be used in terms of affordable housing planning. Key changes that have occurred very recently in terms of Module 3, which under the Plan Conformance Grant Program is how we give guidance to municipalities working with us in consideration of conformance, how they move forward. COA on August 12th approved a resolution granting a waiver from COA's third round growth projections for conforming municipalities. Now this was consistent with the executive order by the governor, executive order 114, and our MOU with COA. This is the process now for which this is done. It's done through a waiver from COA. And it authorizes then the calculation of a municipality's regional master plan adjusted growth projections based on conformance with the regional master plan. So a waiver is granted for conforming municipalities. In addition, on August 12th, COA also approved another resolution regarding the schedule for submittal for all Highlands municipalities that previously received an extension from COA. Previously, COA gave 51 municipalities in the Highlands region an extension to December of this year for their fair share plans for the housing element. that has now, those municipalities now, under this resolution, have been granted a further 6 months. So that takes them to June of 2010. So that those are the two actions that COA took on August 12th. So let's talk a little bit about those adjusted growth projections. Executive Order 114 and the MOU between the Highlands and COA provided that municipalities that conform to the regional master plan would use the Highlands municipal build-out results and then adjust them for the fair share period ending 2018. COA on August 12th approved a guidance document as part of those resolutions to calculate the regional master plan adjusted growth projections for that fair share period 2004 to 2018. The regional master plan adjusted growth projections are based upon the Highlands municipal build-out reports plus actual growth based on applicable residential and non-residential certificates of occupancy for 2004 to 2008. So in other words, some growth has already occurred. So you calculate what those certificates of occupancy are, and that takes you up to 2008. Then you use the projections that we give you, and you divide by the appropriate number, and you figure out what the growth share obligation is moving forward. Prior round and rehab obligations are the same as those found in COA's appendices. Any exclusions as permitted under COA rules are also entered into the calculations. I'll show you an example of it so that it helps in a moment. COA's resolution adopted on August 12th, 2009, allows for municipal choice. Option one is obligations based on the regional master plan adjusted growth projections divided by 5 for your residential, 16 for your jobs. So you can use that number. Or you can use COA 2018 growth share obligation. Both options use the combined residential and non-residential obligations. You can't mix the options. For most Highlands municipalities to date, option one obligations are lower than option two. Some Highlands municipalities may have option one obligations that exceed option two. All are due to 2004 to 2008 growth. So those are obligations they've already accrued. Verification of that data, a specific occupancy data from DCA is critical, and we advise towns of this in the instructions. This is a sample just to give you an idea of how it could look. The COA 2018 growth share obligation for some municipality would be 100 units. So that's just for the fair share period. The regional master plan adjusted growth projection obligation, 50 units. So how do we get to that? The municipal build-out report for this particular town shows that there's 140 units and 16 jobs. COs, certificate of occupancy, issued between the 2004-2008 period, let's just say 100 units and 16 jobs. You add that up, so now you've got 240 units, 32 jobs. You divide your residential units by 5 to figure out how many affordable units, and you see it's 48 affordable units. You divide your non-residential 32 jobs by 16, and you get your 2 affordable units. So you can see the total obligation under the regional master plan build-out would be for 50 affordable units. The municipality may select 50 unit regional master plan adjusted growth projections, or they could go for the 100 unit COA 2018 obligation. That's how it works out. Plan conformance requirements. December 8th, 2009, this is what we are requiring, and this is the timeline for municipalities going through plan conformance. We require the calculation of your growth share obligation. In other words, you've done your build out, do your fair share, you're planning just to see what is your obligation. And you then have to do your identification and your review using the regional master plan of previously identified affordable housing project sites. That's just to make sure that they're consistent with the plan. And the last thing that's required by December 8th is the statement and justification of need for the use of the regional affordable housing development planning program. That's that transfer program we've talked about. COA have draft guidelines out for that transfer program. That transfer program can only be used by the regional planning entities, Highlands, Meadowlands, Pinelands, and Fort Monmouth. So they put out draft guidelines. We're anticipating municipalities will want to use these, and so we're asking them to give a statement and justification of need, because the Highlands Council will be establishing priorities so that those municipalities that cannot build those units for, maybe it's because of environmental constraints, would be the first potential candidates to use the transfer program. By March 1st of 2010, we're asking for a draft housing element. So not adopted, just a draft housing element, and a fair share plan summary, so that we can do a regional master plan evaluation of those sites, those new sites that we're considering. And by June 8, 2010, an adopted housing element and full fair share plan is required to be sent to COA, and that's what their resolution says, and we'll get that at the same time. So that's the timeline. So this has given municipalities, because of the actions by COA to give them this extension, it's given them a longer period of time to do this work, which most municipalities felt was very needed. Talk a little bit about module six. So we've done modules one, two, and three. Module four is the environmental resource inventories. Those have all been sent out, the template, and we told you many of those are back to us already and being reviewed in-house. Module six are the model Highlands ordinances. The purpose of these is each model ordinance incorporates all relevant regional master plan requirements for that particular topic. They include all the provisions necessary to implement the ordinance, that is, the definitions, administrative procedures, etc. Right now, we have released those to the professionals who are working with municipalities in the grant program, and they have until September 4th to get back to us with comments on those ordinances. Revised models will then be posted on the website for everyone to see. We did send those out to council members. The models are guidance. Municipalities can modify ordinances for adoption, but conformance with the regional master plan must be retained. So whatever changes they make, so long as the protections afforded under the regional master plan are there, then that's fine. And of course, they can be stricter. The due date is the date of submission of the petition. So for preservation area lands, it would be December 8th, 2009. Planning area lands, any time, because there's no mandatory date for submission materials for planning area. All materials submitted in draft with petition. And the reason for that is the council has to approve those petitions. They can either approve with conditions, or reject. And you want to give up the municipalities opportunities to make changes if necessary before they go through the adoption process. The Highlands Land Use Ordinance, that's one of these. There are three model ordinances we sent out. The Land Use Ordinance model, its purpose is to implement the immediate mandatory requirements of the Regional Master Plan regarding land development and disturbance. It specifies exclusions and exemptions and methods for determination. It talks about the regional master plan resource protection requirements, addresses the septic system density requirements, addresses the requirements for low impact development techniques, conservation restrictions, mandatory clustering in the agricultural resource area, etc. It contains the submission checklist requirements and prior Highlands Council and Jersey Department of Environmental Protection review for specific types of resource disturbances. The template is not yet finalized. As I said, it's out still, we're still receiving comment on it from those professionals. There are two Board of Health ordinances. One is a model septic system ordinance. Its primary purpose is to ensure that septic systems are properly constructed and maintained, to prevent ground and surface water contamination. And as a model potential contaminant source management ordinance, primary purpose is to ensure the protection of critical groundwater resources from the discharge of pollutants from a potential contaminant source located within a prime groundwater recharge area or a wellhead protection area. And we, what we anticipate doing is having received comments back from the professionals, we will bring this to the council and talk about this some more at the September 17th Highlands Council meeting. Now we're going to get into the TDR program update. So that, yes?
Can I ask a question before we get into that? The proposed transfer program, like TOLA. So if the town decides to conform to the RMP, and so their fair share is whatever it's been computed using our numbers, can they still transfer 50% of those?
They can transfer out 50% of their obligation, yes. That's prior obligation and projections, 50%. Now, those guidelines are draft by COA, they haven't adopted them yet. Once they adopt them, then what the council will be considering then will be our affordable housing guidelines, and you'll have to go through the similar processes that you went through for the regional master plan in order to adopt those. Your guidelines. In other words, if we're putting together a prioritization program and methodology, you will adopt that procedure and that process. So right now it's just that we're working on the draft guidelines from COA that we're using, and they've allowed that this would be considered during this process of working with municipalities under module 3.
Now, where all can you transfer those?
For the moment, what we're saying is within the Highlands region. Right now, you're allowed to do it in any of those regional planning entities are allowed to use this program. So this would be within the 88 municipalities of the Highlands.
As opposed to within any of the counties that happen to be in the Highlands?
That is correct for now. If the Division of Law thinks otherwise and comes back on that, there may be a potential, but for now it's restricted to the 88 municipalities. But I know you're saying within the TDR program, we can use any of the lands within the 7 counties. That is not currently the case with this program.
Yeah, and, you know, when towns used to be transferring those obligations, it was the urban areas that were anxious to get these. We don't have many urban areas in the Highlands.
No, we don't. But from what we've heard from some of the planning firms, there is some interest in this program in both receiving and sending in. Okay, your TDR program update. What you had asked for at the last meeting was to explain the role of the council versus the role of the Highlands Development Credit Bank. So here we go through the major responsibilities of the Highlands Council. To establish the TDR program, including working with municipalities to establish TDR receiving zones and approve model conservation restrictions. To establish an initial Highlands development credit value, currently in, 16,000 per HDC per Highlands to determine the Highlands development credit allocation for the sending zone parcels, to assess the program at specified intervals for improvements, and to work to pass new TDR legislation providing greater opportunities for the use of Highlands development credits. That is to create more demand. And you know, we've worked on that in the past, looking at a statewide bill which would allow Highlands and Highlands credits to be used statewide. That would be an opportunity to really enhance the implementation of this program. And now to take a look at the role of the Highlands Development Credit Bank. The bank's role is to issue Highlands Development Credit certificates after a property owner records the appropriate conservation restriction, to serve as the administrator of the Transfer Development Rights Program by tracking all the Highlands Development Credit transactions, to serve as an information clearinghouse regarding the Transfer Development Rights Program and link potential Highlands Development Credit buyers and sellers, and finally to serve as a buyer and seller of Highlands Development Credits. So that's the sort of division of duties. And what we've done now is to further this is to talk about the timeline that we put together working with the Highlands Development Credit Bank. This is proposed. So, you know, if certain things aren't done in within this timeline, it may push this out, but currently, this is the goal we're working to. To approve the Highlands Development Credit Allocation Determination Application Materials, that's a Highlands Council approval at our September meeting. In your packet today, you have the materials, those allocation determination application materials. So I ask you to have a look at those. If any you want to bring to our attention, let us know. You'll be considering that approval at our September 17th meeting. Launching the web-based Highlands Development Credit Allocation Determination Tool. Again, that's the Highlands Council responsibility. We anticipate doing that in September. Jeff has been working with Nathan McLean in our GIS department. They've been spending a lot of time over the last couple of months working on that tool. It has to recognize three Highlands values and opportunities for development, three Highlands regulations in order to be able to determine the allocation in the appropriate areas as determined by the regional master plan. So again, we're hoping to launch that in September. So begin reviewing the Highlands Development Credit Allocation Determination applications in September, because again, that tool will have been launched. Approve conservation restrictions. So we've done a lot of work with the council and with the Highlands Development Credit Bank on the conservation restriction language and with our state agency partners. Now that we're hoping that the Highlands Council September meeting will take its final action on that. It is a Highlands Council responsibility, but you're taking input from HDC, Highlands Development Credit Bank. The open period then for the processing of the HDC allocation determination applications, Highlands Council responsibility, would be from September 17th, when it's to start coming in, through to December 17th. We need the bank to approve its operating procedures. We anticipate that being done by the Highlands Development Credit Bank at its meeting. The September meeting is next Thursday, September 3rd. Thank you, Jeff. To approve the Highlands Development Credit Certificate application materials, that's again a bank responsibility, and that will be done in October. And then consideration, we've got those applications in, consideration of Highlands Development Credit hardship purchases, that would be a bank responsibility, and that would take place between January and March of 2010. So that's looking at those applications and considering the hardship purchases. So that is our projected timeline for GDL.
On the development credits, the value of $16,000, that number based on anything other than just a number, because I can try to understand these TDR and development credits, and sometimes it's Greek. But in layman's terms, how would a property owner decide whether or not they should even bother with the paperwork? And is the paperwork a commitment to them if they don't like the result in it?
Well, the first step is what the landowner would look to the web-based tool. They put in their block and lot, and if it's in the right area, it will get an allocation of a number of credits. So that's how they get information. But I will ask Jeff to give you, I don't know if you can do it in layman's language, the...
Well, that's important, because when we go back to our constituents, I mean, we have to try to explain this, and although it's the reports are very thorough and nice, sometimes it's very hard to translate that.
Right. And I will just say that there was a lot of work done by the committee who was looking at the Transfer of Rights Program under Scott Whitenack to develop this start-off figure, and then work has been done with the council. But I will ask Jeff to just briefly try to explain how we reached that particular figure.
We started off using Mod 4 tax assessment data, looking at property values under that, adjusted for the, drawing a blank on the terminology. But we looked at the adjusted values. We broke that out for every municipality. We looked at those parcels that had no further development potential, so we could really focus in on the value. And then we basically ran regression analyses to come up with a per credit value. And we were able to arrive at a single dollar amount for HDC because our allocation process normalizes for variations in the real estate markets across the region and even within the county, for example. So as the most basic explanation, without going into any extreme detail, that's the way we arrived at that dollar figure. And it's important to understand that the Highlands Act required the council to set that initial value. It's really a value probably used initially by the bank, but that doesn't prohibit anyone in the private market from selling for more, selling for less. That was just a requirement of the act that we had to establish that initial credit.
The value of this thing, the issue of the question of what if someone disputes that value? You know, is that a fixed value or can they dispute that value? By having a third party or another party say, you know, your number's way off.
If they're involved in a private transaction, the parties themselves would establish what that value would be. The methodology that we use to arrive at that value is part of our TDR technical report. It's out there, it's on our web. That information has been available to the public since that report was published last fall. The value itself, again, is really more for purposes going forward right now for the bank's consideration. And they're looking at that value as part of their operating procedures and when they go to make hardship purchases, the value that they are going to use. But again, falling back to private transactions, it's left to the parties themselves. The other thing to keep in mind is that we didn't look just at the data that we had assessed and analyzed, but we looked at values from programs, TDR programs around the country. We looked, for example, at what the Highlands Development Credit Bank set as their initial credit value back in 1981. And they had set a per-rate value of $2,500. Translated into 2008 dollars, that's about $5,200 per rate. So we, again, look to different measurements to kind of benchmark where our results, the analysis of our results.
The reason I address that with a great deal of interest because the success or failure depends on the reality of the dollar figure. If it all boils down to the finances, and if the numbers aren't right, you're doomed to fail. The numbers have to be right in real world numbers, you know. And so my question is, when we say, for example, a municipality does a study, actually what you're saying is the results are analysis and inventory of values should pretty much match you. Is that true?
That is certainly true.
Thank you. Now, so we've shown you the goals here for the timeline established for the TDR program. I want to bring you up to date on the status of TDR feasibility grants. We've approved 8 to date, and they are for Chester Borough, City of Clifton, Town of Clinton, Harmony Township, Opatcong Borough, Lopatcong Township, Oakland Borough, and Washington Borough. You have 2 more before you today. You have 2 resolutions for the Borough of Pagoda and Tewksbury Township. And just to let you know as well, the Highlands Council staff, in fact, it was myself, Jeff, and Tom Borden, went out to Longhill Township and gave them a presentation at their request on the Transfer Development Rights Program. Yes. A lot of the things that you were showing, you had to do the transfer area, sending area in the view. What our role be with regard to receiving areas? Will we review the site plan application that is going to take place? Will we impose environmental constraints?
We'll be very much involved, and again, I'm going to ask Jeff to address that.
In the regional master plan, we set out a general process for the designation of receiving zones. So a municipality will petition the council for designation of the receiving zone. Part of the process leading up to that is a lot of feasibility work that the municipalities have already started to engage in. At the point where they're submitting their petition, the petition will also probably have a draft TDR overlay ordinance that the municipality would lay out the receiving zone district, what the development density or intensity of use is going to be, and the number of credits to require to build. So all of that would be before the council through this petition process at the appropriate time.
And then when it comes to the site plan review, will we
be then that would be left to the municipality at that point, because you would have already seen all of the planning work and economic work up front at the time of the designation process.
Yeah. A couple of other things that are not covered on the PowerPoint, just to bring you up to date. I wanted to let you know that I processed the contract modification. I did send out this information to you in my executive director's report. It is a modification to allow Biohabitats to subcontract with Conserve Wildlife. This is to assist in the development of a conceptual approach to help implement the no net loss standard for critical habitat in the regional master plan. The ultimate goal is a web-based tool augmenting the landscape project information to provide a sense of relative habitat value. This modification would add $20,000 to the original contract amount of $85,000. And as permitted in the bylaws and referenced in the contract resolution, I'm reporting out on that to you. Also want to let you just a quick update on the water use and conservation management plans. You know, we were working on those with the under contract, and having sent out letters to approximately 40 municipalities in the potential project areas to gauge their interest, council staff will now begin the final selection of 10 pilot areas for those plans, those water use and conservation management plans. The other thing I wanted to bring you up to date on is I had spoken about the actions taken by COA on August 12th in terms of those two resolutions, that one that granted the extension for the COA planning and the other that was the waiver process to allow for conforming municipalities to use the regional master plan build-out. I did want to let you know that Fair Share Housing Centre has put in a motion to stay, so they've asked COA to stay that decision. COA will be contemplating that at the September meeting. So they are opposing those two resolutions and the guidance document on how you do the calculations for the affordable housing in terms of consistency with the regional master plan. They also amended their appeal in the Highlands Master Plan Executive Order 114 MOU, and they've added to that the August 12th resolutions by COA. And finally, last night, I received that they are also have sent us information on the filing a notice of appeal on the housing guidelines that we put out for Module 3. We put out instructions, they weren't housing guidelines, they were instructions for Module 3 in the grant program. As a result of COA's actions on August 12th, we let the municipalities that are working with us in plan conformance know what our instructions are, the timeline that we showed you on the PowerPoint, and all of that. So the Fair Share Housing Centre are also appealing those instructions. So that's just to bring you up to date. Now, what we're going to, I've spoken with Chairman Weinbach before the meeting, and we'll ask Tom Borden to prepare a memo for you and send that out to you next week on those issues. Thank you. That concludes for the second
question. Have all the towns with land in the preservation area submitted material to council?
All but one, and we're working with them. One municipality has not yet filed a notice of intent, but we were in communication with them last week. They asked us to assist them in the revised notice of intent, which we did, so we are optimistic that we will receive something from them. All other municipalities with lands in the preservation area have filed that notice of intent and have done much of the work we described to them.
Item 10, which is two resolutions of grants to consider.
I propose those resolutions.
Is there a second?
Okay. The first of those is for the borough of Pagoda. They want to use the transfer development rights receiving zone feasibility grant. They are asking for the amount of 38,000, and they provided information to the council as to why they're asking for that particular amount. There are six tasks set forth in this grant application, and it is one of those, the task four, which is the real estate assessment of the potential receiving zone. They've asked for more money in order to do that. They're looking at various areas in Pagoda, and the second task they're asking for more money to do is a revision of, to task one. They're asking for 3,000 more there. Total that they're asking for is 38,000.
The grant, the nominal amount is 25,000.
Yes, that's correct.
How they indicated how they're going to utilize the 25,000 beyond the separate part.
Yes, they've set forth the amount for each one of the six components for a total of 35,000, and then in a letter to us, they asked to further adjust task one from 6,000 to 9,000. So they have presented information on each of the tasks associated with a total grant amount of 38,000.
David Schultz, I'm gathering that you're doing your best to keep municipal professionals employed. That's what these grants mean to me, and I have them in my hand, a March 17th, 2008 grant from the town of Clinton for $23,500. Files have been approved. The work was to be done in 4 months. That was put in September of 2008. It seemed to be September 2009. Mrs. Swan advised me that the town is still working on it. These jobs seem to go on forever with very little oversight, very little control or definition of tasks. This town of Clinton grant should have been slam dunk. Dunk is probably the best word for it, where it was to transfer development from one section of town to the other. Town of Clinton is a small town. They had very little vacant land. The land that they were proposing was constrained land. It's just more boondoggle money going out the door with nothing to show. And those comments will apply to the second resolution as well.
Jersey Farm Bureau. First of all, a suggestion. In talking about these grants, it sounds like some of them we don't see too many results. But I understand that at least a couple of the agricultural grants have been finished up and are having great results. And I'm wondering if it would be a good idea to have maybe somebody from Sussex County come and report to you all, like in a meeting like this where your agenda is not real heavy. Because we're very interested in the results of this. Secondly, the master plan elements that are due very soon, does that include the ag retention master plan elements? We are probably more concerned with whether that's going to be done by that time also. Another question we have is...
Are you talking about the specific resolution we have on now about the grants for that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not. Okay.
Any comments on this resolution? Councilmember, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? That's the first one. Second.
The second resolution before you is for Tewksbury Township. It is also for a TDR grant. Feasibility study. They also have outlined the six tasks. In fact, we give them guidance on what the tasks are that they should do in a feasibility study. We are also giving them
a target completion date for each of the elements, each of the six elements that are to be completed. And they are looking at the figure that will outcome to the grant of $25,000.
Motion has been introduced and seconded. Mr. Schultz, comments on the record? This is the resolution of the council member Fennell. The public comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Before we turn to public comments, are there other issues council members want to bring up?
I've been working with Eileen and Tom and John Ewing Carbon Copy on some ownership questions and how the ownership of lots that were in place at the enactment date of the act were impacted by exemption one and two, which is the ability to construct a home on an existing lot by the original owner or immediate family member. And the number of people that I run into, and agriculture especially, have started to raise some concerns because the Act says that the construction of a single family dwelling for an individual's own use for the use of an immediate family member owned by the individual on the date of the enactment of the Act. That's the basis for the exemption. So what happens when the property was owned by, for instance, a family-owned LLC. For the last 15 years, the Department of Agriculture, Rutgers Cooperative Extension, have all preached the importance of estate planning, and a big component of estate planning is creating family-owned LLCs or corporations so that you can gift through to different family members to retain your business ownership or your the ownership of your business entity without being taxed by debt. So we put together a number of questions. Tom rendered his opinions. We sent them down to DEP to get their opinion. And perhaps not surprisingly, DEP's opinion isn't the same as ours. Tom had concluded that if the ownership entity is an individual or a family-owned LLC, then the exemption stays in place and it would apply to the immediate family members. The DEP disagrees. So the DEP is suggesting that this exemption only applies to the lot that is owned by an individual. So if this truly is the case, we now have another whole subclass of property owners out there that are LLCs, corporations, that don't have an exemption. And I don't believe that this is what the legislature intended. There is no definition in the Act of individual. There is a definition for immediate family member. So herein lies the problem. Who truly has the authority to either determine this? Is it our authority as a council to say we interpret this exemption to include family-owned LLCs or corporations? And in fact, some of the other questions that we posed, you could extrapolate very easily that it makes perfect sense. Because, for instance, what happens if the owner dies and the lot is inherited by the children? DEP agrees with us that exemption one remains in place because any of the children could have built the home anyway because they're an immediate family member. So what's the difference if it was an individual that owned, died, and left it to the children versus an LLC that has the parents and the children in it already? There's absolutely no difference. In fact, we went on the question, well, can it be passed down for generations? And they said, and they've agreed with us again that yes, it can be passed down for a number of generations because of the definition of immediate family member. It includes grandchildren, cousins, in-laws, stepchildren. If you read the definition, it's pretty confusing almost. How many people are included in this definition? Yet they don't agree with us that the ownership entity that when they speak about who owns it originally, that it includes something more than a single person. And I'd really like to encourage us to pursue this because if this is to remain in place, that it's only a person, individual, this has a huge impact on a lot of different people. And I know, I can tell you that almost every family-owned farm that I'm familiar with is now in some sort of entity. And this would have a huge impact on agriculture. Of course, part of our mission in the master plan is to support agriculture in the Highlands. Here's an instance where these people don't particularly want to build for development, but they want to build for a family member who's remaining in the business, and they thought they had exemptions. Now even the exemptions that were allowed in the Act, perhaps they don't have because they're an LLC and not an individual. So it gets a little redundant, but that's the So you don't like feelings. My feelings are we have the decision-making capabilities here, but we shouldn't have to listen to the team. But you may not agree with me. Maybe the governor doesn't agree. But I really think we need to document and finalize what our position is going to be on this. Maybe perhaps first we need to agree what our position is as a council, and then we need to pursue that with the DEP or the governor's office or the legislature to do whatever it is that we do officially to make sure that our opinion is what stands.
That's the point, where, I mean, since, particularly since Tom's not here, why don't we put it on the agenda for the next meeting and mention that everyone on the council will get some kind of briefing update or
something. I'll do that.
Somewhat similarly, maybe something different. The council's taken positions on several legislative initiatives over the years, which the legislature has not yet acted on. I think it would be useful also for next meeting to review those and have the council reiterate our support for all the ones we still support, with the hope that perhaps some of them could be addressed if there's a left session of the legislature. There's one about farmland appraisals, farmland, and there's one about extending transfer of farm rights, receiving our statewide. I don't think this is time to bring up new legislative issues. We have to give our support.
Other comments?
Our next council meeting, as we mentioned, is November 17th at 1 o'clock. And the credit bank is the next Thursday, September 3rd. Comments? Yes.
No.
I wonder if you all looked at me quite a few of us here. Questions or statements. The first was that, maybe September meeting or whenever, a report on those finished up pay grants would, I think, be very interesting to all of us. Secondly, the master plan element and retention. I know you don't answer questions at these meetings, but we have a question about whether that's going to be due early in September. Or is that one of the elements that comes it's not one of the mandatory elements, it's going to come later. The third question is, I've done a little looking at the build-out analyses as compared to the COVID numbers itself. And what happens to all those units that are not going to get built in the Highlands because the build-out numbers are so low? Have you had any discussions with COA about what they're going to do about those numbers, or you could just drop them? And also the third round numbers, that's a whole lot of houses. Are they going to be built somewhere else, or are they reducing their target? And the other thing is, what's the relationship between the build-out numbers and all of the exemptions that might be possible in towns? Does the process of looking at the town information also include all the possible building lots that could have single-family houses built for their residents or family members? And how does that fit into the numbers the restrictions that seem to be coming out of the whole process?
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition.
The first couple of things I have to say are actually questions. I recognize that unless I'm very lucky, they won't get answered, but maybe I'll get answered at some other point. The slide shows, in the past, you have been very good to put them on your website, but that doesn't include maps. And you had a couple of maps today that would be very useful to have, so hopefully we can get those maps. The 51 towns that have received the extension from COA, it would be very helpful to have a list of which towns those are. Model 6 ordinances. I would be very curious to know if at some point we will be taking public comment on the Model 6 ordinances. I recognize that right now the process that you have in place accepts comments from the professionals working with you on pilots municipal performance, but I think the public has a great deal of interest in those ordinances and would like the opportunity to comment on them. I wasn't clear from the bullet on this issue and the slideshow, but the language for conservation easements for TDR, if I understood it correctly, will be approved by the council at the September 17th meeting. And the last is a request that, as you know, renewal of funding for the Garden State Preservation Trust was approved by the legislature to be put on the ballot at our November election. The council has been consistent in its support for that. I think we will be coming to you again with a request for yet another resolution of support for that. But there are many municipal officials in this room who can go back to their own towns and also seek resolutions of support, and counties, I beg your pardon, also, and seek resolutions of support for this ballot measure. So we will be coming to you and asking for that, and I really hope that you will all take a leadership position in seeking support for funding, refunding of the Garden State Preservation Trust. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Dave Pfeiffer with the Association of Major Environmental Commissions, and I've been reading over some of the Module 6 ordinances, and I want to compliment you on getting those together. You can avail yourselves of an ordinance database at our operation. We have several thousand ordinances in the file, some of which are septic-related ordinances. I want to make a suggestion to you today about specifically the septic-related ordinances, and that is that having seen them be resisted for years in communities, one of the concerns is that in the case where a system fails an inspection, the family is placed in a very tough position financially. That redoing a septic system is not cheap. Rebuilding is a matter of serious concern financially for those families. And I would think that you might consider a revolving fund with low interest loans to be available to those people. In the end, the public's good is that the water stays clean. And you may remove some of that initial resistance that people have to wanting a septic management ordinance in their community if they know they're not going to be stuck with a condemnation sticker on their front door because they don't have the funds to redo their septic system. There's some other matters about situations where you have multiple failing systems in a neighborhood, and you do need to think about how that would be taken back into and reviewed against the other provisions of the RNO. If we found a cluster, for example, under these municipal operations. So do think about the financial wherewithal to make it possible for folks to renovate their septic systems remove cesspools, do those other things that are, we know we have to do if we're going to have good functioning septics out there throughout the region. So I leave you with that thought, and I look forward to reading the rest of the ordinances. We certainly hope you will take up the conference. A couple of things. My recollection of the TDR presentation, $16,000 number, it was a function of an estimated 30,000 potential TDR credit sites by the time $16,000 per credit, which meant that you could buy all the development rights on the privately owned property in the Highlands area for $480 million. So if you want a quick calculation as to how land has been devalued, I think that would be a good place to start. And I think my recollection is correct, Jeff. Also on the TDR slideshow that was put up there, there was no mention as to where the justification came from for these assumptions. If it was a legal opinion by counsel, I would like to see it. If it was something less than that, you may want to reconsider it. And also, it did not address how staff is hired. I know the Act allows the TDR bank, whatever it's called, the opportunity to have its own staff, including an executive director. When I go to the TDR bank meetings, I see the same staff I see here. It gives it certainly every indication of being essentially a dangling appendix to this Highlands Council. Does not have the necessary independence that really I think the Act gives it. Also, Mrs. Swan sent me a copy of the contract with Princeton Hydro and you. It is not complete. It lacks appendices A and B. So I would like appendices A and B. Thank you.
John Smith. Any other comments? Do you want to go back to the question you raised?
Just one, because I think it's important on the septic ordinance that Dave spoke to some innovative ideas, and I wanted to make sure the council members, many of you have been in contact with me, to voice issues and concerns and ask the staff to do some review. And staff, we've also had conversations with professionals, so we're hoping to come back to you with some approaches and some, and certainly we've looked at funding issues, so we'll be coming back to you with more information on that. I wanted to say that. On the issue of bringing people forward to do presentations, you know, if we can, we will. I will tell you the September agenda is going to be a very busy one in terms of TDR. So we'll see where we can fit things in. It's going to get more difficult moving forward. I did speak to John about the fact that given that we would be expecting petitions in December 8th, the Highlands Council is going to get into a very busy period starting in 2010 of review of conformance documents, because you are on a time period. Once we have judged a conforming petition to be administratively complete and ready to be presented to you, once we present it to you, it's a 60-day turnaround for you to approve the conditions or reject by statute. So you're going to be very busy, and we can talk more about how you want to portion that out. The other issue, I think there are several questions that we can get back to the individuals with answers on.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.